and the June Taylor Dancers.
What? Is this a flashback to previous credits?
Yeah.
You know what that lady saw when she screamed there?
Lou Ferrigno?
Maybe.
No, oh, stop it. I'm getting nauseated.
Maybe she saw Bigfoot.
Bigfoot pizza?
No, maybe.
I don't.
Howdy, folks.
Hi.
I'm Adam.
I'm Jason, and we're here with Peter Graves.
I'm Peter Graves. You're watching A&E's The Beginning of the End.
The Beginning of the End. I'm Peter Graves, and I attended the University of Minnesota.
The smooth sounds of crickets overcoming Chicago.
Not crickets, they are locusts, because they have shorter antennae,
yes,
as we learned from Crow today.
Right, right. That is very important.
No, from Tom.
It's very important. So, the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. The beginning of the end of our patience. Oh!
I have a peculiar amount of notes around this one, but I think it's just because I was so bored that it was easier to distract myself on my phone.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I think we agreed that this is the most boring thing we've watched in this podcast so far, right?
Yeah, this is a tough one.
It tops Rocky Jones, Space Ranger, and it tops Giant Man, Amazing Colossal
War
Beast.
War of the Colossal Beast. Yeah, I can't even imagine going to sleep to this one, honestly.
Well, I can imagine going to sleep it. Yeah. Very quickly, and then not waking up until it's over. Yeah.
I'm losing my mic.
Should we pause?
The boredom has overcome me.
You can't see, but there's basically the extremely elaborate setup. There's a table on the edge of which are two boxes, and you're trying to put a mic on
the very edge of it. Yeah, well, I'm trying to jerry-rig a solution to my problems, much like the movie.
Yeah, so they create giant locusts with radiation.
Yeah.
And unintentionally, they're trying to make giant tomatoes. And they do make giant tomatoes.
Right.
And they even have a line where they point to them and say, "These are tomatoes." which was the moment when I realized this is not a written film. This is a hastily assembled collection of scenes.
I don't know if it's my favorite riff. I wrote down a bunch of great riffs, but the riff that sums the movie up for me is the one where they go, "This is even worse than that other stuff that we don't know what
that
it was."
We don't know what it was.
Yeah. They drive up to this bombed out warehouse after having gone to the city that was bombed out.
Yeah.
And she gets out of the car, and I think Kevin is like, "This is even worse than that other stuff that we didn't know what it was."
Yeah. They drive out to this bombed out warehouse, and that's where we first see a giant grasshopper. It's 35 minutes into the movie, which is probably a record for us.
Yeah, it's 25 minutes when we see Peter Graves.
Yeah.
And another 10 minutes to get to the...
to get to the giant grasshopper.
Yeah.
And so they go to the bombed out warehouse. The giant grasshopper eats the deaf guy that's only in the movie so that he can get eaten by a grasshopper.
Right.
Then they leave. They go back to the military base. They tell the military base that they saw a giant grasshopper. And then there's a bunch of driving scenes, and then they go back to the bombed out warehouse again.
Yeah.
They return to the most boring set piece, and they probably spend a collected 10 to 15 minutes of the film just crawling around this warehouse looking for giant grasshoppers.
Kevin used the establishing shot joke again. Guests of the beginning of the end, stay at the Capitol Dome.
Yeah.
He used that exact same joke in the last movie.
Yeah. Well, you know, it merits repeating. I mean, this is like the most, this is the best example of the Mystery Science Theater cast and writers being at their peak and doing the absolute best they can. Like, just like...
I feel like there's a butt coming.
But with the absolute worst chosen film. Like, the most boring, just plotting, gray men in a gray room talking film that we've yet watched. And so it's hard because it literally is like one of those things where you're like, is this a good episode of Mystery Science Theater? They're doing so well, and they're really funny.
But, you know, I think I was thinking about this as I actually went out, you know, to take a quick bathroom break.
Yeah.
I think this episode needs to exist, and I'll tell you why. Because it's kind of a reminder of how this show came to be in the first place. like you can imagine being in the theater with your buddies and watching this movie and just realizing that the only way you're going to stay sane is to start making fun of it. Like start chatting with your friends. I mean, this actually happened one time. I remember we were living in Austin, not me and you, but like me and a bunch of buddies.
Yeah.
And we decided we would watch the worst movie we could find on purpose that was actually out in theaters.
Uh-huh.
And it was in like Invincible Soldier 2, The Return or something like that. I might've gotten it slightly wrong with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh.
And it was actually in theaters.
Uh-huh.
This is back in Austin in like, I don't know, maybe 1999 or something around
sure.
there.
Yeah.
And it was so bad. I remember there's this scene in the movie where they run over the bad guy with a truck and then they do a close up of the tire that the guy's under and he reaches up and unscrews the little air cap and the tire slowly deflates while the truck is sitting on top of him.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was a bad movie. And we started doing the Mystery Science Theater thing. We just started making wow. fun of the movie and riffing. Because what else are you going to do, right?
Yeah.
This movie is so boring. Can you imagine actually seeing it? We were talking about this during the movie. Like, again, as I had the same thought the last time. I'd love to go back in a time machine to when this actually came out and sit in a theater with people watching it. Like,
yeah.
Were they into it?
I guess if you really, you know, if you didn't know anything about filmmaking and you'd maybe never seen a creature feature where they use layers of film to superimpose a giant, you know, insect onto, you know, a forest or something. Like in those conditions, and it's the 50s, it might be really cool.
Well, that part might be interesting, but even if you thought that part was cool, would you think that the movie was good?
I don't know. I mean, people did have more patience for slow film. And good movies from the 50s are this slow, but they're written better and they have better casts. So I guess the question you're asking really is like, in the 50s, could your brain overcome how bad the acting and writing is and just enjoy the giant grasshoppers and enjoy the air-conditioned movie theater and be entertained by that alone?
That's part of what I'm asking. But there's also, I mean, I guess in a way that's what I'm asking, but I'm asking a sort of larger question, which is, we were talking during the movie about how some things are good and timeless, like the Beatles.
Yeah.
And then other things are good. Like, there was a moment in time when they were good and entertaining and people watched them unironically. And the example I came up with was Skrillex. Like, people were really into Skrillex. Like, legitimately, unironically, they were like, I want to go and listen to a Skrillex concert.
Mm-hmm.
But now we've sort of moved on, and I'm sure there are some people who are still watching. I mean, you were mentioning that some people are really into these 1950s creature movies.
Well, I think it's like, so I think
like they still love them. Even in 2025, they're like, oh man, I can't wait to see a Bird Eye Gordon movie.
Most people agree, like, okay, so like in electronic music circles, most people would say that, yes, they don't listen to Skrillex anymore and they've moved on. However, they would admit that he was groundbreaking and did some things that had never been done. And I think that people who love B-movies and love this Bird Eye Gordon 1950s shit would probably say the same thing. They'd probably say that, like, that there were things that these low-budget B-movie directors did with, you know, $50, you know, and a shoestring budget. That nobody had ever done before, and they managed to entertain fans and film buffs in a new way. And I don't think that those people are apologists. I don't think they'd say that The Beginning of the End is a good movie, but I think they'd say that it's like important in the annals of film history.
Sure.
Like it has a purpose.
Right.
And I think people in the 50s largely probably didn't think this was good, like good filmmaking, but they might have been entertained by it and they may have not ever seen anything like it before.
Okay, but that isn't... Yes. And still, I'm wondering, when people went to watch Skrillex, because I remember when he was big, they weren't doing it to make a point about...
He's still big. Like, he is still around.
Is he still around?
There's still people that go to Skrillex shows.
Yeah. I mean, when people would go to his shows, they wouldn't do it because they were trying to make a point or because they were impressed that he broke new technology ground. They just like his music.
Well, they just wanted to go and dance.
Yeah.
They wanted to dance to electronic
music. Yeah, but also
music.
They like his music.
But there were people that... There were music producers, there still are music producers that acknowledge that he broke ground, like he took electronic music in a new direction.
But I'm just saying, in 1950, whenever, if people went to the movie theater and this came on, were they like, oh, great, we get to watch another Bird Eye Burton movie?
I think they were making out and eating popcorn and talking over the film and waiting for the A movie, because remember, a lot of these movies were paired together, right? There was a better movie coming after this. They probably arrived late. They enjoyed the air conditioning. They went out to concession and got a Coke.
But, you know, we think of these as really bad movies, but we have to remember that the odds are pretty good that these were still above average, because the law of averages says that the really bad movies actually just got lost. You know what I mean? Like, they destroyed the film, or maybe we don't even remember. I mean, that happens with music, right? I mean, the really bad stuff.
Well, there was a lot fewer films, right, in the 50s being made than there are now, because it was very hard to make a movie. Okay. You still needed a lot of money and a lot of time. Even to make a Bird Eye Gordon film was like a miracle.
Yeah.
So we have to keep that in mind. Now anyone with an iPhone can make a film, but back then it was very, very difficult. So I don't think there was a lot to choose from. I don't think the library was very vast and wide.
So you were saying at one point that you sort of wish that Mystery Science Theater just didn't do movies like this.
Yes. I respect that some people like this schlocky, this deep 50s schlock, but these low budget B movie creature features are just too, there's a sweet spot for a Mystery Science Theater movie where if it's too entertaining, if it's too good a movie, it's not fun to watch as a Mystery Science Theater film, because you just start watching it. And if it's too bad of a movie like this is, it's almost like so boring that even when the Mike and the Bots are at an 11 out of 10, like just pumping on all cylinders, so funny, there's still just this part of you that's like, I really don't want to watch this movie.
Well, but I think there's got to be more to it than that, because obviously just a movie being really bad doesn't disqualify it. Otherwise, Manos wouldn't be fun.
No. Yeah. But it's not. Yeah. So it's not. It's not the. Okay. Quality is the wrong. The wrong metric. The metric is boredom level. Like how boring is it?
Yeah.
Because it's Manos is very bad, but it's not very boring.
It's kind of interesting though, because obviously I was extremely bored, so I'm certainly not standing up for the movie. But if you think about it objectively, it's kind of hard to know what went wrong, because there are plot points. You know, there's a point where Peter Graves discovers that the audio signal can attract them. I mean, there's scenes where they're trying to emote.
Yeah.
And yet somehow it just doesn't.
Yeah. Peter Graves is taking the film very seriously. You can tell he's trying.
Yeah.
There are situations, as you know, there are some Mystery Science Theater movies where you watch famous actors in the film and you can see that they're phoning it in.
Well, and I wouldn't.
But this guy's not phoning it in.
I wouldn't say the acting in this particular movie was especially bad. It wasn't like Space Ranger levels of bad. Like the woman in the film, she seems like a fine actress. She seems like she's trying.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I guess it really is the pacing. Like, nothing happens for huge chunks of the movie. Like, the first 35 minutes of the movie are utterly forgettable, to the point where I actually don't remember. It's like she's following some other story and she drives up to the... You know, I remember there was one shot where they show Chicago and they're trying to make the point that Chicago is empty.
Yeah.
And in a modern movie, that would be like half a second where you just see one shot of an empty street.
Oh, they show 8 to 10. Yeah.
They show 8 to 10 shots and they hang on each one for about 2 full seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel bad because I don't want to be the kind of person that is like short attention span, 2025 TikTok. But we were talking about how there's got to be a balance, right? This is just too slow.
Oh, no. I mean, you can't excuse our short attention span on this. Like, even in the 90s, when we watched this kind of stuff as kids, like when we saw Mystery Science Theater on TV, this was dull. This was really slow.
Yeah.
And you can tell when it's the dialogue that's your clue that the whole thing is written to be much longer than it needs to be. Like, when you're just listening to Peter Graves and the woman just talking in the lab about, you know, the audio frequencies and how it's going to kill the grasshoppers and all that, you can just feel that the writer is exercising the opposite skill of like what good writers are supposed to do with films, which is like, you know, to be brief and keep the dialogue crisp and make sure every word has a point, right? It's the exact opposite of that. It's like when you're a kid and you're writing a 5-paragraph essay and you only have one paragraph and you're right. Like, I got to get this to 5 paragraphs.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally that exercise. It's like, how do we make a 20-minute concept into like an hour and a half movie?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How do we just pad and elongate every point of dialogue and just stretch?
Okay, but of course, this is not a podcast about filmmaking. It's a podcast about Mystery Science Theater. What were some of you, like, what do you think about? Okay, so like the skits, for example.
The skits were great.
Yeah, but it's interesting so because there's really only a couple things they could lean into, and they leaned into them hard. A, the movie's boring.
Yeah.
Like, I remember the very first skit, I think it is, after the movie starts anyway.
Yeah.
They get on, and Mike says, I don't know about this movie, guys. I mean, nothing is happening.
Yeah.
And that's especially funny because at that moment it was about 15, 20 minutes in and literally nothing had happened.
Yeah. But like what I liked is they took, you know, so Mike is really bored and he's a brand new cast member at this point, right? He's only been on the show for like 3 or 4 episodes. It's season
right.
5. He
right.
just took over in the middle of the season.
Right.
And they were thinking as writers about how to sort of distinguish Mike. And so they wrote that he's bored. And so it's so bad that he's decided he's going to call the Mads up in the middle of the film,
yeah, yeah.
which is like a thing Joel never does. And so he right. calls them up and then you just see them being domestic
yeah.
and like watching TV and yeah. exercising yeah. And Dr. Forrester's talking about how he ate all the blueberry squares or whatever.
lemon bars.
And then at some point they realize that like yeah. Mike is listening to them and they like jump and they like panic.
I don't know if it's because the movie's boring or if it's because of Peter Graves or it's because Mike is new, but this episode had a big dose of Midwest
yeah.
going on.
Yeah.
There were so many Midwest lines, that whole scene with the lemon bars and all yeah. that. That's very Midwestern.
Well, Peter Graves has a slight Midwestern accent.
Boy,
and they
really
leaped,
does.
They leaped on the fact that he spent a lot of time in Minnesota, which I think is where they are too. Right.
Right. Aren't
they in Minnesota.
Right.
And they did a whole skit about like, let's, you know, it's Crow writing another one of his bad screenplays. And the screenplay is about how Peter Graves went to the University of Minnesota.
When he's graduating, he's like, as I reflect on my time at the University of Minnesota, you remember, you may have been there when I enrolled at the University of Minnesota and yeah. said such things as, I'm Peter Graves and I'd like to enroll in the University of Minnesota. Yeah.
yeah. I mean, basically, that's really funny though.
Those jokes are essentially all about how there's literally nothing happening.
Yeah. But that's a great example of how you can take one very simple concept and with good and clever writing, you can make it really interesting. Like, oh my God, we're watching a really boring movie with Peter Graves. And then they like did really good stuff with that. It's literally the opposite writing exercise from the film itself.
In the movie too, though, a lot of the riffs, I realize that now that Joel's gone, it's really Trace that seems to be holding up the banner of Minnesota. I mean, and to a lesser extent, Frank Conniff. But there's a riff where they get to the town of Ludlow and they're seeing all the destruction. And Trey says, I think the Larson should take better care of their yard, which is hilarious, but also like the most Midwestern
yep.
joke, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
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 I kind of wonder if that's why they got the idea for the whole I'm Peter Graves and I went to the University of Minnesota.
Well, skit. Also, I mean, the film is set in Illinois, you know,
yeah,
which is basically
true.
The Midwest.
Yeah.
I mean, there's Midwest stank all over this for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
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 And it's season 5 of Mystery Science Theater, which is definitely in the prime of that midway. You know, they hadn't moved to the Sci-Fi Channel yet. They were still like operating very shoestring budget.
Okay. You got any more good riffs? I got a couple more that I wrote down. Give me a good riff. One of your favorites.
It's hard for me to remember the riffs. I love the Tom Servo doing stand up about locusts, like the difference between locusts and grasshoppers, I think was great. I loved the sketch at the end where they took, you know, people write into Mystery Science Theater and they took some postcards that they had and they put grasshoppers in front of them, which is exactly how they filmed the grasshoppers climbing the buildings,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And like there are the moments when they point out that the grasshopper's legs are actually going past the
yeah.
edge of the postcard.
Right.
It's just like,
well, that has the energy of the space mutiny dead woman thing. Like,
totally
dead.
Yeah. It's just, it's so bad. It would have been so easy for Bird Eye Gordon to just cut the film before the leg goes over the edge of the building.
He either didn't notice or he didn't care.
Nope.
There's a part near the beginning where the cop gets up from the desk, or I guess it's the military guy, and he leaves the room and it's just dead air. And I think Tom Servo says, I'll take the long way out of the room because this is a Bird movie.
Yeah,
after
this
all.
Is a Bird Eye Gordon movie.
It's just so padded, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. They've got to show every driving, every like car parking.
Oh, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, really bad stuff.
Okay. So time to pick our grade.
Yeah.
Time to pick our ranking.
So when I originally... I did a set of rankings like a long time ago for Mystery Science Theater movies, and I'm remembering now that I gave a lot of these fives purely because of the fact that the movie was a one. Like a lot of these season five, season six, you know, into seven, it was like I loved the cast. I loved Mike and Trace and Kevin. Such a good combo. Bill Corbett was great later too, but like this is just, they're in their prime and they're so funny, and their funniness is a 10. Their skits are a 10. Dr. Forrester and TV's Frank are an 11 out of 10, if it's possible to go past 10. And the movie is a 1. So I would just give the episode, I'd be like, I'd shrug my shoulders and say, well, this is a 5. Because yeah. It's like the aggregate of how funny they are and how absolutely pitifully bad the movie is.
Okay, so wait, do you...
So I'm going to say 5.
Yeah, I guess I feel similarly, but for me, the end equation ends up at, I think, at best a 4. I think 4 is as high as I can go.
Yeah.
And I'm actually tempted to go with a 3, but I feel like that would be a mistake because there's probably even worse to come.
There's
and I guess the reason is for me that, you know, I just think about like brain space and real estate. There's just so much less of the skits. Like there's 10 minutes worth of skits and you got to sit through an hour and 20 minutes worth of this.
Well, so there's actually like, there are... On the official YouTube channel, there's some episodes like this, and then you can find in other places in the internet, there's people that have just shown, they just pull the skits together. And this is a great episode where I want to just watch the skits and skip the movie.
I mean, it's like hard to know what to do with that, because if you skip the whole movie, I don't know that that would work for me.
Somebody should make a version of that where you have all the skits and then just some jokes from the film.
Well, I wouldn't mind if you sucked out at least a good 15 to 20 minutes. I think you could do that from the movie without losing any of like what's going on. And most of it would be from the beginning. I mean, there are just huge chunks that, and you know, I've seen even modern movies where things get slow and you're like, I don't know what the point of that was. I mean, I remember Dawn of the Dead, I think. I was like, the whole first half of the movie seems kind of pointless. They don't even see the zombies until like halfway in.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's exclusive to the 50s, but oh man, maybe it's the black and white. Maybe it's the pacing, but man, God, yeah. It's just like, oh man. But it makes me feel bad. Like, I'm like, oh my God, is my attention span TikTokified? I mean, I don't want to be, you know, Mr. Short Attention Span Theater.
No, I imagine that even in the time of these movies, like I said, I bet people were talking over the film and, you know, kissing their high school girlfriend and, you know, eating popcorn. And I don't think anybody was like glued to this, riveted and
wrapped.
Just, yeah. I mean, I sincerely doubt it. I really do.
It makes me think again of Space Mutiny, because I was Space Mutiny on that brain, but that one scene where it has nothing to do with anything and they're just repairing the computer monitors. Mm-hmm. And then Crow says like, oh, the gripping adventures of this guy and that guy. I mean, there's just like huge chunks of this movie where you're like, who are these people and why, like what?
Yeah. So we talked about one of the interesting discussions we had is why is Rocky Jones Space Ranger film better than this a little bit, like more interesting. And it's basically just comes down to the fact that like Space Mutiny, you know, the Rocky Jones space thing has interesting costumes and ships and things to look at.
Well, right.
It's more visually appealing.
I was pointing out there was a scene where they were basically just showing a PowerPoint presentation in a conference room. And the scenes of this movie that don't have giant locusts in them are
they're PowerPoint presentations.
They're like, there's nothing that's happening in the movie that couldn't happen in just slice of life drama,
right,
except a slice of life drama about nothing, about the worst business meeting you've ever been in.
Yeah. We said, one of us said, this is like Red Zone Cuba with occasional giant locusts.
Yeah. Well, and even if a movie's groundbreaking, it can be incredibly dull. I mean, I took a film class in college and I remember we had to watch Slackers, which is well known because it's well known for several reasons, but one of them is the whole movie was shot in one take, I think.
Oh yeah.
And that's a cool idea and a neat thing that they did, but it makes for a really boring movie.
Yeah.
I mean, you certainly wouldn't watch it twice, right?
Right, right.
What's that famous movie they make all the film students watch? Oh, I can't think of it now, but there's like a well-known movie that's just known because film students have to watch it, but it's like Wavelength. Wavelength, I think. Yeah. I mean, this is like the wavelength of putting a giant locust on screen. Like, hey, look, you did it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Good job.
But see, like, it's funny because I would rather watch a sequence of interesting imagery that has no story and no acting than something like this.
Oh, yeah.
I'd rather watch, like, Powakwatsi or one of those.
Yeah, kind of, I was just thinking, yeah, I have that movie on Laserdisc, Poyanaskatsi.
I mean, yeah, because at least that there's, like, some music and there's some things to look at.
Yeah, some
this is just music. This is just people talking.
Yeah.
And they're not talking about anything interesting. They're just talking.
Yeah. And ultimately at the end of the day, like there's really no point. Like what I mean is there's, you know, when you watch a great movie, like, I don't know, The Matrix, like there's some themes going on. Like,
yeah.
What is reality?
You can talk about it afterwards and like you can discuss like what it means.
Right. But this movie
doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything.
It's meaningless.
There's no philosophical. I mean,
the only reason it maybe gets like a 2 instead of a 1, like I could bump it up, is just purely because it isn't one of the ones that ends with everyone just dying.
Yeah.
I have a thing, we talked about this in the middle, where like if a movie's going to be boring, it can't also be depressing. You can have a depressing movie, but it has to have a theme or a point or something interesting to say.
Yeah.
And so if it's going to be dull as dirt, it at least should have a happy ending.
I'm a little surprised they didn't make them fall in love at the end.
Well, it's implied, I think.
Maybe a little bit.
There's that one moment where she like rests on his arm.
Yeah, I know.
Like, okay, this is a romance.
Yeah, but
basically.
You know, they always like.
They usually kiss at
the end. Yeah, they usually kiss at the end.
Maybe she didn't want to kiss Peter Graves.
Because I'm Peter Graves. That I enrolled at the University of Minnesota. I don't know, man. Yeah, I guess there's not much to say about this one, really. I mean, maybe we should just kind of leave it there. I don't know. You have any final thoughts about the beginning of the end?
No.
Gray men in a gray room doing gray things.
I don't ever want to think about that movie again, honestly. And if it comes up randomly on TV, I'm just going to skip to the skits.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not the worst one we're going to watch. God, maybe even my 4 was high. I can't believe you're willing to give this a 5.
Yeah, you're going to get to Skydivers, and you're going to be wishing you had given this a 5.
You think so?
Yeah, like...
It gets worse?
Oh, yeah. It gets more boring, for sure.
Oh, I don't know.
Because there are movies like this that don't even have the grasshoppers. Like, they've got nothing. Just people talking.
Yeah, like, what's the one that's all about the San Francisco airport?
Oh, San Francisco International.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's just dull. Dull, dull, dull. Really, really dull. Yep. It's really bad stuff.
Okay. Well, we got that to look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
On that note. All right, folks. Beginning of the end.
Mm-hmm.
And the end of the beginning. And the end of this episode, that's for sure.
I'm Peter Graves.
Not Peter Graves.
I know what you're thinking, Grasshopper. Did I fire 6 shots or... Oh.
I wasn't scared. Were you scared?